You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine, proud to bring you our weekly news recap for the week of the 22nd of December. Actually, it's a bit more than a weekly wrap, it's more like an annual wrap, and nobody better to share this moment with us than the man at the helm of Cunningham's on the beautiful northern beaches of Sydney, the immediate past president of the REI New South Wales, and now head of the REIA Professionalism Committee, John Cunningham. So welcome, John.
Thanks, Samantha.
Thanks for coming over to Elite Agent headquarters today. We've got a couple of fun things lined up for you today, including talking about some of the trending topics this year and the new legislation that's expected to come into effect next year. So to start with, just give us a bit of a reflection from your point of view on 2017 from where you've been sitting.
Look, it's been a really interesting year. I think I love a change year, and this has been a really significant change year, not only from the perspective that we're in a constant change loop, but we're in a change of market conditions, which we haven't seen for 4 years. So that, to me, is going to sort everyone out. We're going to see who's capable of surviving 2018, because I think there's going to be a very different dynamic occurring in that year. 2017, fantastic first 4 months. Everything's still going as normal. The writing was on the wall very early that things were changing. And it's very quick. You can see it. You can see sentiment change within buyers. You see the number of people coming through open homes diminish. You see the number of people bidding at auctions diminish. And there's just a vibe in the marketplace that says, hey, guess what? We're not really feeling the panic anymore. So we adapted pretty early to that and still maintained high-level sales and listings through that period. We were having tough conversations early. That was the key.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've just finished your term as president of the REI of New South Wales, which has been a big couple of years for you. Over that time, you've managed to really get the attention of the state government, and in particular influencing their policy direction on the path to professionalism and so on. So how hard was that to get their ears, and what made you do that to begin with when you started your presidency?
I think it goes back about 10 years ago, Samantha, where I joined the board 12 years ago, but 10 years ago I decided that the standards were just slipping so badly. Lobbying government was just like, you know, landing on deaf ears constantly. Mm-hmm. You were just banging your head against a brick wall with the bureaucrats. To try and get through to a minister was nigh on impossible. So we had to find an alternative. And when Barry O'Farrell was elected Premier, we had the year of Mike Baird as Treasurer, and then subsequently the year of Victor Dominello as Minister for Innovation and Better Regulation. It required us to have the ear of someone like that. Yeah. Without that, we were going to go nowhere. So the classic lobbying scenario was we just kept banging on and finally broke through and then had 100% support. So once you get through that barrier and they actually trust that you actually have the interest of the consumer at heart, and that was the biggest problem. We were dealing with fair trading and no one trusted us, that we actually did have the consumer's interest. Because the classic statement, if it's in the consumer's interest, it's in the agent's interest. But it starts that way. It always starts with the consumer.
Yeah.
So when we got there, we had to really throw everything we had at it. And I think the outcome that we've achieved, that will be through Parliament early in the new year, it's at its second reading, it's almost there. I think it's going to be very significant for the industry, and it'll have a long-term effect in a positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that might be a good place to segue into our top 10
absolutely
contributor articles, yep, for this year. So you're probably familiar with most of these, but number 10, Josh Fegan on Riding the Wave. But he draws an analogy between prospecting and surfing, and which waves you need to jump on by reading the play. Some of his main points: listening to the customer, being aware of how customers shut down when you bombard them with marketing, and don't focus on how a client comes to market, but why they're coming to market. I think why is the word of 2017. Everyone's been about the why this year. But, John, you're from a beachside suburb, so have you ever used that sort of analogy with your team?
I'm a surfer, so I actually surfed this morning. But the analogy is interesting, and you can use it in many different forms. Choosing the wave of each individual client that you're dealing with, it's a good way of looking at it, because every wave's different. There's not a single wave, even a pipeline, they're not the same. So it's a good analogy, because when you look at each client and what their needs are, I'm sort of moving away from the why to the concept of purpose. You know, there's a purpose in what they're doing. And one of the things I talk to my team about is that every single person that walks through an open home has a purpose for being there. Your job is actually just to find that purpose and then find out how you fit in to that. Same with the seller. They have a purpose in what they're doing, and there's an end goal. So the why is almost like just the start of it. The purpose goes all the way through. And that discovery process is more important than anything else. And it starts from the first contact. And that's almost where negotiation starts as well.
Yeah.
So let's use an example of meeting someone at an open home. One, they've got a purpose of being there. You discover what that is. And you follow that through with a series of questions that discovers. And then the more you discover, the more you can actually add value and provide them with solutions, because that's what people are after, is solutions.
Yeah.
They sometimes think they know what they're doing. They have no idea what they're doing. They actually need someone who's solution-based and can provide them with options and also provide them with conviction. Chris Voss at ARIC was one of my favourite speakers when he talked about the fact that when the stress is on in his role is no different to when the stress is on in our role. Something's going to go wrong, and all they want to do is know that you actually know what to do.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the way that these things operate. And if you don't know what you're doing, you are found out, and you're found out particularly in these change markets. So you've got to understand every wave is different, every ride is different, every journey that the client goes on, both buyers and sellers, is different. If you don't take what you do seriously and you just think this is a process that you connect the dots on, yes, it is process, but the layers and layers of complexities that go around that require a higher skill set to be involved in it. And it almost like that's a technical element of riding a surfboard on a wave.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I couldn't agree with you more that you should not approach each wave the same way, because they're all different. I'm not a surfer, and I definitely wouldn't. All right, so at number 9, we've got Kylie Davis and the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Agents. So this is coming from CoreLogic's Buyer Perceptions Report, where she discovered that only 14% of buyers rated their agents as excellent on the scale of excellent, good, bad, indifferent.
Yep.
You know, so 14% thought that they're amazing. And basically, I think her major point there was, don't forget that buyers are your future sellers, and don't forget to follow up with them once the hammer comes down. And a lot of agents actually forget to do that. The transaction's gone, and then that's it. So do you think that this is a problem in the industry, and are agents really, on the whole, still too much about the vendor?
I totally agree, 100%. 100%. One of the lines that I use when I talk to vendors, one of the lines I train my team on, is that when you're talking to your vendor, say, look, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, I know you think you're the most important person in the transaction, but I'm sorry to tell you, but you're not. Now, you do that obviously in a lighthearted way, but the reality is it's the buyers.
Yeah.
The buyers are actually putting their hand in the pocket to pull out the money to hand to the client. And that's what I talk about in my next story that I'm doing on the core of the industry. It's purpose. The best agent is the agent who looks after buyers for their client.
Yeah.
The client's paying the money. The best way they look after their client is to look after their customer. So for the life of me, I've never been able to comprehend that, because that's where my career started, on looking after buyers.
Mm.
And that's where the great agents learn their craft in dealing with that. And one area I find fantastic to get good sales agents from is great leasing or property managers who've been dealing at that end of the spectrum and look after people, landlords and tenants brilliantly. I've still got a guy working for me 25 years on who was a property manager. He still has clients now that were tenants of his when he managed properties, and they've become clients for life.
Do you know, Craig Ponty said the same thing. Both Craig Ponty and Michael Finger from Ray White Double Bay, both property managers to begin with.
Me too. 2 years. did my apprenticeship in property management. You learn so much.
Yeah.
But it is, it's like, and again, underbidders at auctions, they're your next buyer. Anyone who's expressed an interest in a property, as I say, they come through a home, they're only there for one of four reasons, right? They're a hot buyer, they're a hot seller, they're a warm buyer, or they're a warm seller. And there's a fifth one, which I call an advocate, which is a local. Now, I love advocates, because they actually, you give them the time of day and they sing your praises.
Yeah.
They sing your praise. Oh, actually, this person's really nice. Now, you don't, it's again, they have a purpose in being there, which is they're a local. They say they're going to be carried out in a pine box. Not a problem. Give them respect. Give them the time, because someone else will just dismiss them.
Mm.
And at the next barbecue they're at, they say, you know, a good agent, I met this really nice guy.
Yep. Okay, so next one, number eight, Mark McLeod, are you ready to go digital? So Mark in this article, and he's been a regular for quite some time now, so he's sort of got quite a few articles that are in the top 40. But
right.
So he's saying basically the industry needs to learn a new skill, and that is more about data mining in a digital world. His key point in this one was our businesses must be in line with where our customers are, and that starts with recognising that you can't build a relationship with people by spamming them every week with emails and newsletters. You need structure, digital tools and client-centric processes that will allow for data-driven decision-making. So, I mean, and, you know, we're seeing it a lot here at Elite Agent. We're seeing, you know, new tools and shiny objects coming left, right and centre at the industry, and it's kind of hard to keep up. But how do you feel about that statement? How do you approach follow-ups in your business?
Look, it's a great statement, and we call it an app a day at the moment because that's pretty much what's presented to us.
Yeah.
And it's finding your way through it all. And the reality is, again, nothing replaces the phone call or the face-to-face.
Mm.
But, of course, when you're in a digital age, you've got to leverage digital. And I think leverage is a key word in this environment to say, okay, how are we going to get the best out of this? So when you start to look at the AI world that's approaching us very, very rapidly, the bots are coming and they're going to come and change our world significantly.
Yep.
And this is where they'll live. They will live in customization of client nurture and so on. At the moment, it's sort of there. Everyone's playing around the edges with it, trying to customize things. And I've seen some really interesting customization come through in terms of trying to determine personality matches. Facebook is going to be the biggest one, in my view, for that, because they've already got the algorithms in place. Digital and technology is there to enhance everything that we do. And, you know, Mike Finger and Craig Ponty and I, we know each other way back. 4x3 card, details, updates, all that communication, personalisation, it was gold.
Mm.
And it was so simple, but it was pure gold that you kept that communication level. And when everyone tends to hide behind the email spam concept, I communicated with them, I sent that out, I did this.
Yeah.
There was no communication.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of information going out that's probably not relevant to them.
Do you know what I predict? I predict email will be on the way out. Not necessarily email marketing so much, but I suppose my job's a little bit peculiar in that I get about 300 emails a day, which is ridiculous by any standards. But I've actually moved off email and onto something called Slack for internal communication. Mm. So yeah. I will spend most of my day in Slack talking to the people here at Elite Agent, and then I'll only check my emails a couple of times a day.
That's going to be the big shift. I use Evernote a lot, for example, for just storing information and using that. We've got an internal Facebook page that we communicate internally. We're looking at Slack. We've got Trello in the wind. For us at the moment, we went onto Facebook about a year and a half ago for the internal one, and that's working brilliantly. So no more is all that stuff coming internally by email. It all lives on the Facebook.
Yep.
Internal Facebook page.
So you spend more time there than...
Well, it's interesting. It's almost like there's a time and a place for everything, and you start to figure out where you live in what space. No different to chunking your time for anything that you do in terms of prospecting or client nurture in whatever form you're going to do.
Yep.
It's time chunking. So the classic checking on emails every 5 minutes is the most unproductive thing that you can do. So it's like, how often am I going to check my emails? I'm checking my emails 6 times a day.
Yeah.
So that's just a time frame that I set to do that. And therefore, it's manageable. And it's almost like the same with the phone. My phone is permanently on silent. And I just check it, right? If it's important, I can get back within a reasonable time frame. Otherwise, you're just going to be distracted by all the options that are out there.
Unless someone's really trying to get a hold of you and then you know it's urgent. Most times, nobody's going to fall over or anything like that just for...
If it's urgent, they send a text.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got Matt LaHood at number 7, How to Build a Super Team. So he's certainly had a big 2017, hasn't he?
He has.
The agency got bigger this week too. Their parent company purchased Sell Lease Property, which, going into an interesting year for them if that sale goes through. But in this article, so everybody kind of fell a bit in love with Matt during Transform Masters. They all thought he was the bomb. In this, he talked about empowering the team, being accessible as a leader, and energy and happiness, which is just really simple stuff. But, you know, everyone thought he was an absolute genius. So what do you think are the key ingredients to be a successful leader? And what do leaders in the industry need to do to step it up?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. The big one's empowering leadership, and it's something that is moving away from that diminisher to the amplifier person, or that dictatorial leader, which tends to be the real estate sales agent who's all of a sudden running a business, and they actually don't know how to lead. All they know do is list and sell.
Yep.
So they actually don't understand people who they're actually working and leading above, who they're looked up to. They tend to, like, just do as I say. So that whole concept of leading by example, there was a great example I saw of this. I was down visiting Marshall White down in Melbourne, and it was about 7 in the morning meeting James Connell down there. And I turn up to their office. There's James out the front with a shovel and a bucket and a hose. Someone had deposited a nice present, a very large dog, I think, on the front step. That's leadership.
Yeah.
Right? He could have gone, oh, someone clean that up.
Yeah.
I do a little test. No one, sorry, team, but you're about to find out my little test. I walk through the office and drop a bit of paper and wait to see who picks it up.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting leadership test. It's like, that's not in my job description, so I'm not going to do it. That person's probably unlikely going to be a leader. A leader has to lead by example. They have to give direction. They have to give clarity. They have to give consistency. And they've got to actually have a vision that they can share.
Mm.
And for people to follow a leader, they have to have all those elements in place to make a compelling reason to do it.
Yeah.
And it's a hard task. I was only talking to someone recently about the concept of a sales manager, and which is, to me, almost like disappearing.
Mm.
And the reason is that a lot of sales managers don't have the respect of the teams they're leading because they haven't cut it, or they haven't led by example yet. It's almost like, oh, I'll fall back to that position. And there's very few, I've come across very few great sales managers. It's almost now you need a performance coach in that role.
Or a HR, someone who's actually got emotional
intelligence.
Do
the numbers, or we're going to do this. You might have 4 or 5 people across your organisation that are doing those roles instead of relying on this one person to manage the sales team. And so that's another part of the evolving world that we're in. And Matt's exactly right in terms of what he says, that you've got to have fun.
Yeah.
You've got to have an environment where people want to come to work. And I love talking about the environment of a business in an office. And as opposed to these little silo-based businesses, our business is fully transparent. We have everything on display.
Yeah.
There is nothing hidden in drawers. Every appraisal's on the wall. Every pipeline's on the wall, because that's how the team operates.
Mm.
And there's got to be trust in that environment. And it starts with the leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he won me over. You know, some of the listeners know that my 15-year-old daughter went overseas on exchange. And the day that I went to interview Matt, this is probably a bit of behind the scenes, but it was the day that she left for upstate.
You're a bit emotional, weren't you?
I was very emotional that day, actually. And Matt sort of picked it up. And he talked to me about it that day, and he said, talk me down from the ledge and said, it's going to be all right. We got through the interview. Anyway, you know, 2 weeks later, he called me up just out of the blue and said, how are you going?
Mm.
Like, how's your daughter going? Are you all right? You know, just that simple...
It's a care factor.
You know, yeah, it's a care factor.
It's a care factor. Again, it's something that in leadership that a lot of people just don't think about.
Mm.
You actually have to care for your people. You've got to nurture them.
Yeah. So number 6 was Carl Quested, 9 common cold call objections and how to handle them. Now, this has got nothing to do with the flu, but he talks about some of the stuff that you can do to stop people from putting the phone down on you, and give some examples of what to say when someone says, I'm not ready to sell, or the market's not right to sell. So I think there is 2 schools of thought on this. Is, do people still believe in cold calling? Do you? What is your approach to this? Do you need cold calling if you have the right relationship?
Look, I think the reality is when you get to be an agent who's got traction or in momentum, you don't need to do that.
Mm.
If you're not, it's one of the surefire ways to get traction. And whether you like it or don't like it, it's a methodology, the same as knocking on doors.
Yeah.
It works if you're persistent at it and if you're skilled at it. So if you're great at asking the right questions and getting the right answers and overcoming objections in that environment, you can thrive because you just can get the right person at the right time that's acting now, or alternatively, you create someone that you can provide value to in the long term. And that's the key. It's actually having a purpose in what you're doing. So if you're going to do a street, you have a purpose of specific information that's relevant to the street. Now, what's relevant is something they don't know, something that's of interest to them. So the classic local, current, relevant combination that has to there. So you've got to provide some form of value. You know, the great example of really good cold calling is you've just sold an auction and there might have been 20 neighbours there, but there's 100 in the area that didn't know. Get out on Saturday afternoon and go knock on those doors and tell people what happened.
Yeah.
And that's another form of cold calling. Or get on the phone and ring those people. Little things like that. Get a quick scribble of a letter written by the owner saying how wonderful you were and photocopy and drop that around. Or just do something that's out of the ordinary, but it's spontaneous, but it's relevant, and it's information that's of value and they don't already know about it. So putting the sold sticker up and waiting for the result to appear in the paper on Sunday and then door knocking on Monday is useless.
Yeah.
You've lost the momentum, you've lost the opportunity.
You got to think like a media person, actually. By the time someone else is...
It's old news.
Yeah, it's old news. Yeah.
So there is a place. Was I very good at it? No. Did I do it a lot? I started doing it. In my first 12 months, I did a lot of it. And look, did it make a difference in the long term? Yes,
yeah.
It did. Back in those days, everyone was in the phone book. It was awesome.
I mean, yeah, that's going back to Mark McLeod again. Yeah. He sort of pointed out that, you know, we're the only industry that actually knows exactly where our customers live.
And the funny thing is they turn up to open homes every weekend to say hello.
Yeah.
You know, that's the extraordinary thing. It's leveraging every opportunity in this business and the opportunities are presented to us every day.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're back to Josh Fegan again at number 5. So this is about solving the 10 pain points of prospecting. You wouldn't believe like the number of hits we get on our website when it's about prospecting or cold calling versus anything else. Like, you know, it still seems to be the number one issue for everyone is
the magic bullet.
Yeah.
They're all looking for the magic, the bit that's going to make it easier.
Yeah.
And all the tips usually end up being pretty much the same. It's about preparation, it's about purpose, and it's about conviction in doing it. So if you go out there with those three things in play, because conviction is palatable. People sense your conviction, which leads to confidence.
Yeah.
And when you're confident, people buy your confidence.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do it unprepared, it's going to be an absolute train wreck. So, you know, what Josh talks about in that article is all about those things. And that's why scripts and dialogues are still so critical, no matter what some people think of them.
Mm.
The key is to adapt them to your particular style.
Yeah. It is useful to sort of role... I mean, even we kind of role play interviews and all that sort of stuff, just in case, like I'm rarely lost for words, you probably know that, but, you know, like just in case I am, it's actually good to have something, you know...
I call it a toolkit. You know, you've done all this training, we've done all this role play, because you don't want to practice on your clients, practice on your peers.
Practice on someone else,
And then you pull up the toolkit and it just comes out. And it won't come out unless you've practiced on it.
Yeah, absolutely. In this article, he talks about building social proof, which we've talked about already, about leveraging social networks and about getting really good at the basics, which I couldn't agree more with all of those three things. In 2018, what are the must-dos to be successful in, I'll just say a softer cycle, because I think we are heading into a bit of a softer market in 2018. So is there anything else that you'd like to add to the things that we've already talked about?
Yeah, look, in that prospecting arena, knowledge and information about your marketplace, knowledge and information about your clients, knowledge and information about what's happening in the world adds credibility. So I would advise anyone to read the Sydney Morning Herald every day or the Financial Times. Just get into a space where you're supposed to be a property expert. Well, actually find out about what's going on.
Yeah. Subscribe to the brief, folks.
Subscribe to the brief. Read it. I mean, I've read every one of these stories.
Yeah.
You know, and I never stop learning.
Yeah.
And to me, that is a key of success. When you talk to the successful agents, they never stop learning.
Yeah.
They never stay still. And, you know, because there's always something new happening that you grab here and you grab there. You know, you might go to ARIC and you grab 5 amazing things that you put into your business, and all of a sudden, you know, that might have been a small segment of the whole thing, but they're the ones that make a difference to you.
Mm.
But I've been to these things and I've seen people not taking notes.
Yeah. It
blows me away. They're actually relying upon what goes in this ear, forgetting that it goes out that ear.
Or worse, something that I heard not so long ago is that they're more concerned with the quality of the notebook that they've got to write on, and if it's no good, then they're not going to write notes.
And who's checking them out?
Yeah. Yes.
It's a learning experience. It's you know, there's so many learning experiences out there all the time that people just let slip by. That always astounds me, because there's just learning in every environment.
Every environment. It's funny, someone said to me about the brief, you know, anything else is never real estate related. And, you know, what I say to them is deliberately, you know, because if you, say, meet someone in a coffee shop or something like that, and you don't want to come out with real estate straight away. You know, like it's conversation.
And that's what it is. You've got to turn your whole way of being in relationship land into conversation.
Mm.
So I'll do role play with the teams, and it's just all conversations that weaves in the right questions.
Yeah.
It uses analogies.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of case studies, or what we call selling stories. Stories about, and we share those amongst the whole team, because what Georgie did in that particular one and is great for Andrew, what Andrew did, or James, whatever it is, they're going to learn those stories and apply it to their client if they're in that situation. Now, if you're not listening to those things, or you're not absorbing those things, you haven't got that in your toolkit. And that's when you bring out everything that's appropriate to that particular person, which is all about that, you know, preparation, research, so that when you turn up at an appraisal, you've done all the work.
Yeah.
You're actually in a zone where you can have a completely different conversation with that client to go down the discovery path as to, okay, how am I going to be able to help you?
Yeah.
Fundamentally, that's what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, number four, we're getting there, we're getting through these. Chris Rolls, he was with Rental Express for quite some time, and now he's a venture capitalist and one of the first to dip his toes into outsourcing various functions in real estate businesses. So he wrote on the topic of five trends that will impact real estate in the future. No good news here, I'm afraid, John. Declining commissions. personal relationships won't be necessary to sell or manage property, and unforeseen entrants, like, you know, some of those US type disruptors like Open Door and different ways of buying and selling, that they'll change the industry in new ways. So Purple Bricks, who are a favourite of everyone's to talk about, their revenue in Australia was way up this week, but their losses have doubled, and they're still sinking a heap of money into marketing. And I guess they're one of the different models. Mm. How much do you see folks like Purple Bricks, Open Door, those sorts of people impacting the traditional real estate business? And do you see a point where personal relationships won't matter?
I love a lot of what Chris talks about, and I think he has some very interesting things and perspectives. And he's also the first to admit that what he's talking about is not the whole industry.
Mm.
Unless we adapt and change and evolve into another level, in the absence of value, price becomes an issue or a determining factor.
Yeah.
So in the case of people like Purple Bricks, they have a place, and they will always have a place. Now, I don't know how the revenue model functions. I don't know how they can do what they do, but they're after market share.
Yeah.
And they're getting market share, particularly in Victoria.
Yeah.
Yes, and also in New South Wales, but in certain markets. They're very much dealing at what I'd class as the uneducated end of the market, where people have fear as a driving force.
Yeah.
And therefore, they don't differentiate value between what agents do, because we're all the same.
Yeah.
And we're all dodgy. So that's how they pretty much see it.
Yeah.
So they're going to make a choice purely based on price, because they cannot differentiate. Then there's the rest of the market. And I believe that they will probably, or that type of model, whatever form it comes in, it's been all models around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
They'll probably occupy, in my view, a good 20% of the market.
Yeah.
They've probably got maybe 5 at the moment, that end of the spectrum. But I think they'll occupy a bigger space. And then there will be the rest of the market. The rest of the market, in my view, will be divided into two parts. There'll be the standard agent who thinks nothing's ever changed, and then there'll be the professional agent. And I think the professional agent will probably occupy about 50% of the personnel.
Yeah.
They're probably going to do 80% of the transactions. So that's the big difference that occurs in a space where a client says, go to whoever.
Mm.
You must go there. Don't go there. Go there. Or I wouldn't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
So, but you have to provide value, and a value is not necessarily price.
Well, value is in the eye of the beholder.
Without doubt. And yeah. it comes in so many forms. Now, I had a great example. I sold a home for one of the heads of one of the top four banks in Australia. And we did our performance fee structure with him, which is a fee that they determine based on the result and the service that we provide. It's within a range.
Mm.
And it was a $2.5 million type home a few years ago now. And he loved it, loved the concept, loved that everything was being based on the delivery rather than the promise. Took all our advice in terms of makeover and styling and so on. Campaign ran a treat, I ran the auction, he was live listening to it elsewhere. And what I did as an auctioneer made it probably about $150,000 difference, for the fact that I had connection with the buyers and I was able to actually get a buyer that was out back in on the auction floor and all those sort of things. So he decided to pay us the high end of the fee, which was 2.5%. And he also gave a bonus to me as the auctioneer and a bonus to the agent that I had handling the sale, $5,000 each. Now, you get that when you've got a relationship that's built on trust, one, but is also about the delivery. So, and he said to me, John, I love the fact that I can't do what you do. There's no way in the world I can do what you do.
Yeah.
And you can't do what I do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That is the world we're in.
Absolutely.
Right? The world we're in here, let's take North Sydney as an example.
Yeah.
Very few people here would even have the inclination to sell their own home.
Yeah, too rough.
No time, too hard, not my space, too emotional, too draining, too stressful, all those things. So we have to occupy that space as professionals, and we won't occupy it unless we behave as professionals and we stand accountable to that.
Yeah.
That's the big difference between just doing what we do now. When you become a professional, you're accountable to the professional standards.
Yeah.
You're not, you're out.
Yeah. I have an analogy too for that one, that I can remember having a TV a few years ago when I was renting an apartment on my own. It was broken. I couldn't afford a new one. So I got on to YouTube and found out that I could buy a $10 capacitor from Dick Smith. And the YouTube video showed me how to install this, you know, change capacitors. I know it's just ridiculous, isn't it? It's listening to this story. And all of a sudden, the TV is working again. Fantastic. And then a friend of mine says to me, well, you know, like, next thing you know, you'll be cutting your own hair. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, just go and look up YouTube. And there are plenty of videos there on how to cut your own hair. And I think that is, you know, when someone can, when, you know, I was convinced that I could just go down the street and buy myself a capacitor and, you know, easy, plug it in, job done. When it comes to cutting my own hair, which is complex and emotional and all of those other things, yes, I could watch a video. Is there any way I'd do it? Not on your life.
No.
And I sort of think, you know, looking at the world around me at the moment, you know, there are definitely things that I outsource in life just because I value my time more. So, you
know,
like
Leonard Steinberg say at ARIC, time is the last luxury.
Absolutely. So, you know, like if I'm on a deadline, do I want to cook? No. I'm going to order from Thrive or somewhere else that's going to deliver the groceries to me. Do I want to do my own ironing? No. If someone is going to sell my house or manage my property or something or other while I'm sort of chasing my next story, am I going to let them? Absolutely. And I think, actually, that there'll be more of that.
I totally agree. And I think, again, that's the space that we have to understand that is evolving for us if we're prepared to step up to it.
Yeah.
And we can't do it by doing what we've always done.
Yeah.
It just will not happen because, there's not the differentiation, there's not the value because there's been too many poor experiences. Again, you look at Kylie's figures of 14%, excellent rating. And I think the sales ones were about 32%. Excellent rating, and that's still a pretty shocking number.
It's a big difference.
Because that's when you start looking at the 68% that is less than that, and it's heavily weighted towards the bottom. That's frightening because that's actual experiences of our services. And again, generalizations here. I know there's a lot of amazing agents out there that look after their clients 100% without doubt.
Yeah.
And have all the skills necessary to do that. But as an industry, we're viewed by the collective. We're not viewed by those individuals. However, when you get to separate those, I think everyone will step up to that, will be very happy with the outcome. You're going to be proud of doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
We provide incredible services and outcomes for our clients, and we should be proud of that.
Yeah. So we're into the top three. So finally, Eddie Seaton, who is the CEO of Agent Box, he wrote an article called 10 productivity apps that leading agents use every day. And some of these we've already talked about. And yeah, I think this is the multitasking kind of thing where we're seeing there's an app for just about everything right now. So he sort of talked about some things like Facebook Workplace, which all the franchises appear to have jumped on.
Yep.
AnyDo, Slack, WhatsApp, Buffer, all the others. Just for the listeners at home, what are your favorite apps right now?
Okay.
What's on your phone?
On my phone, Evernote.
Yep.
WhatsApp, and clearly I'm using Instagram and Facebook in that respect. And Instagram, both from a business point of view and a personal point of view, I love photography, so it's a cool tool. So even our business one is just really cool photography that we have in properties and things that we're doing in the community and so on, just to a graphic designer does some awesome stuff.
Yeah, actually, I've seen your new brand, like, because Mark and I like doing the Spit to Manly walk and the Live Love.
Find Love Live. Yeah.
Love, yeah.
Get it right, Samantha.
Sorry. find Love Live.
If yeah, you, if no, you lived over there, you'd be able to just roll off your tongue. The interesting thing about that brand now is that it stands alone. It doesn't actually need our name attached to it.
Yeah.
So, been a really interesting journey. We had Justin Martin come on and do the brand 3 years ago. And yeah, we go through campaigns and different messages.
Yep.
One of our favourite ones was good people, great results. That's all we say. It's just a statement that, and I think, you know, Chris Hanley's, again, guy that get that. Yeah, that's exactly what it's all about. But using the apps, and I've got a lot of apps on my phone, but you're right, which ones do you actually use?
Yeah. All right, silver medal time. Jed Xavier, so 9 truths about success in real estate. You're going to love this one, I think. This was a bit for the newbies in the industry. So that real estate is more than the shiny cars and shiny objects and things like that. That he made a couple of key points that it's tougher than you think. The brand won't make you successful, and being a people person is not enough. So how many times have you heard, I got into real estate because I love people?
It's interesting. It used to be because I love property, and then as I love people, I'm so good with people. People don't actually understand. You have to understand people to make this work. And the psychological elements of what we do, I think, are still so underrated. We look at the training we did with our team over the last 12 months. It's probably more psych-based training than anything. Profiling and personalities and leadership attributes. And we did a great one with Rachel Robertson on respect trumps harmony. So that whole respect within the environment you work in, respect for your clients, and how much that plays and how do you portray that. Because people tend to personalise most things, and that's where they get in the way. See, there might be a people person, but they still personalise issues. Finding your way through that mire of reaction to responding, all those things, it's just so much more than people think it is. And you've got to have the smarts. You've got to have what I call emotional intelligence and emotional toughness.
Yeah.
In this business. At the same time, with what Jet's looking at in terms of his Revive and Wellbeing programs, that's something that I think is also going to be a continued massive issue.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about that because we're seeing more and more. There is a very, you know, like what I'd call a dark side to the hustle, let's say, that we're all taught is a good thing. And I must admit, you know, like I've sort of done more than my fair share of hours this year, so I'm looking forward to a break. But when there is so much pressure to perform and there is so much pressure to kind of maintain that poker face, it's really hard in this industry to put your hand up and say, I'm having a hard time, without it being considered a sign of weakness.
And that's where leadership comes in.
Yeah.
It really is all down to that. I mean, if you're in an organisation that cares and understands people's circumstances, and they're all personal elements because everyone's different, and you build in the structure into the organisation that caters for that, those people are going to get better and thrive. One thing that I made sure when I started my career is that my family would not suffer as a result of me being a real estate agent. Yes, I work Saturdays. I made it a point that I will not work Sundays. It wasn't a religious thing.
Yeah.
It was the fact that it was my family time. That was my ultimate family time. But I also took holidays, and people were aghast at me taking holidays. You're going to lose business. So I'm going to lose some business because I'm away for 2 weeks. If that's the case, I probably haven't set it up properly to lose it, that I can lose it. So it's like, okay, well, if that's the case, I am going to lose it. That's okay. That's the price I'm prepared to pay to have my life in more harmony. I think most people just fail to see how the two are connected. Now, if you're in a place where your family life is sound, your kids love you and they respect you and you have time for them, you're going to perform at an entirely different level at work. And it's, again, not how many hours you work, it's what you put into those hours. So, again, when you look at people who are super effective, they're really efficient. Efficiency comes first and then effectiveness comes after that.
Yeah.
So being efficient with your time, chunking your time. I would do things like go home at 3 o'clock and pick up the kids from school, and then at 5 o'clock go back to work, come back at 7. Or I would see them at 5, go out and see clients at 7. Having the phone running all the time is just insanity.
Yeah.
You know, it's everyone can wait. Clients, for me, I'd say, I don't work Sundays. I don't negotiate on Sundays. And everyone would go, thank you. I'll get a day off.
Yeah.
And so you set the rules. You're actually in control.
Yeah.
People forget that.
Yeah.
But you're in control so long as everyone understands what the rules are.
Yeah, I do think I have noticed a shift, particularly maybe it's in the last 12 months, that people do respect those sorts of boundaries. So, I mean, I get up early in the morning to really revise the brief, and like it's pretty fresh every morning because we get up at 5 o'clock to make sure it's fresh. But because of that, and because I'll work Sunday afternoon to get Mondays ready, I won't have meetings on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And when I say to people, yeah, look, I can't see you Friday afternoon because I work Sundays, everyone's quite understanding. And, you know, like I was terrified of that in the beginning.
I think most people are terrified. And they're terrified of the loss
that
will happen.
Yeah.
People are mostly chasing their tails.
Yeah.
The inbox is open all the time. The phone's ringing all the time. They forget that they're actually in control of what they're doing. And a lot of them haven't actually set up the relationship with their client correctly.
Yeah.
They really haven't set the framework. So the framework for us is all about the strategy meeting. When you have that, okay, we've listed the property, we're going to come back in 2 days' time, we're going to run through the whole campaign, exactly how it's going to play out, we're going to run scenarios, you're going to know exactly what I'm saying to clients, and we're going to have all those things tick-tack, we're going to have a great communication plan, you'll understand how nurture program goes with our buyers, you'll understand how negotiation strategies work. And so they go, great, we're all on the same page, and this is how it's going to roll out. Right.
Yep.
Sometimes we might have to have difficult conversations with really nice people. And, you know, if that's going to happen, it's going to happen in the first week.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to delay the inevitable. And people appreciate that. They actually want to know that you're completely upfront and honest with them in everything you're doing and you're rolling out in their interests. A lot of people avoid all that stuff. I think I'll deal with it at the end.
Yeah.
And it's just the wrong
place.
But
if you keep on top of it, then it can't snowball.
And it doesn't come and bite you.
Yeah.
When you investigate people who've been bitten, you always find they didn't do something right at the beginning. It's like a tenant that moves into a property. I always ask, you know, there's a problem. What did you do at the lease sign-up? Did you explain to them what the rules are in renting a property through us? Did you explain what the expectations are of the owner and your expectation? Did you actually have that conversation? Or would you just say sign here?
Yeah. One of my favourite quotes is from that Larry Winget guy. One of his expressions is, do what you said you were going to do, when you said you were going to do it, the way you said you were going to do it.
Yeah, my father had a quote on his shed. It was drilled into us. If a job's worth doing, it's worth doing well. If you understand that, everything then flows from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we're down to number one. So the weirdest things happen on slow news days sometimes, John, I have to tell you. So we often have days where we're sort of scratching our heads going, what are we going to write about the next day? And then you find you've gone through the 10 stories in the newsroom and they're all terrible and you don't want to talk about them. So you go back to your old email where sometimes some PRs still email you. As I was shuffling through that C list of possible stories, I came across a story on 10 signs you need to work on your emotional intelligence at work by a lady called Ushta Nag. And so she was someone that I'd never met before and never known. But clearly, after, you know, like all of the conversation we've had today, it's no surprise that it kind of boils down to this being number one. And I can tell you, this was number one by a long way.
Wow.
So I dug this story out, and it was old, and I gave her PR a call, you know, did a bit of fact checking. She's a HR lawyer turned HR person, worked in a few places where they were definitely lacking in emotional intelligence. And I think the reason that this went so far and wide is because it pointed out pretty much 10 things I think everyone saw in their boss, which is wrapped up in their own world, overconfident, that would never happen, right? Not in this industry. Fearful of change, not listening, different things like that. So Ush says, emotional intelligence accounts for 85 to 90% of success at work and is the leadership X factor that people talk about in people like Richard Branson and those sorts of leaders that we all hold up as esteemed. So, given that, what do you think? Do you think, on the whole, we all need to work on our emotional intelligence in 2018?
It's going to be a really big factor. I mean, the workplace is getting more and more stressful. You think, I'm going to use a property manager as an example. The stress that property managers are under is massive. And there's pressure on downward pressure on fees and upward pressure on expectations of delivery. And we try to bring in as many automated processes to help that, to make their job easier. But they're still in that one-to-one relationship with landlords and tenants, no matter what way you cut it. It'll be a huge shift for the industry in the next 2 years, but critical, because emotional intelligence is lacking in most 23-year-old females who were doing property management, which is the profile,
mm.
who their limited knowledge is a certificate of registration course in the main, more than 50%.
Yeah.
They're not licensed. So their level of skill and ongoing training is nothing to the extent that of what sales agents are exposed to.
Yeah.
Even though there is plenty of training out there for them, it's a huge portion of the industry, massive portion of the industry.
It's kind of like we need to pick up something outside the industry almost and bring it in.
What's really interesting though is that there's no other industry that exists in the space that we exist in, where here we are sitting dealing with a client here and a customer there on an ongoing basis.
Mm.
It is just doesn't exist. And so in a sale transaction, it happens over a shorter period of time. In a management situation, it's ongoing.
Mm.
And so you can build relationships that are really sound, and then they move on and someone else slots into that space. And it's just a constant movable feast.
Yeah.
So that's probably our biggest challenge. In terms of the sales environment, the emotional intelligence is actually just simply understanding people.
Yeah.
Understanding their nuances, understanding their responses, who's the responsive type, who's the reactionary type, what you've got to do to actually go into that space where, you know, you ring a landlord up, for example, and this is just the simple one. Oh, we've got a problem with the hot water system. They don't want to know you've got a problem with the hot water system.
Yeah.
They actually want to know that you've got a solution for the problem you've got with the hot water system.
Yeah.
So it's understanding what people actually need and how you deliver it that can happen very, very efficiently and very effectively if you go about it the same way.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot, actually. The quote from the Google CEO, Sundar Pichai, I can say his name now. It's taken
well
me a long time to be able to pronounce that name. But consumers are now comparing you or anyone to the best service they've had, not in real estate, but the best service they've had in a Michelin star restaurant.
Yeah, Ritz-Carlton service, FedEx yeah. efficiency.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy to yeah. say if you're after a standard to meet. The objective at Ritz-Carlton is that we're going to think for you before you think of it.
Mm.
So, you know, I say to my team when I'm training them, the idea when you're actually listing a property to sell is that you need to know absolutely everything and even more than the owner knows about their property.
Absolutely. Well, we might leave it there. Thank you so much for your insights. I mean, I'm sure that that's going to give people a lot to think about over the break if they're looking at brushing up their skills and, you know, having a look at how to get 2018 started in a really positive way.
I really see it as an exciting year ahead. It's
yeah.
going to be massive change, and it's an opportunity for people to actually step into that change. And I talk about actually forging the change you want.
Yep.
Rather than actually having change forced upon you from regulation or whatever it may be. Actually, why don't we be the change we want to see
yeah.
as opposed to the other way around?
It's like Gandhi, hey?
It's like Gandhi.
Be the change you want to see in the world. Well, with
yep.
that, I think we'll wish all of our Elite Agent readers and subscribers and our listeners today a very Merry Christmas and a fantastic festive season and all the best for the new year. And same to you, John. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Samantha, and all the listeners, and thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and we'll see you all in the new year.
Absolutely.
Bye.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.